All right, here we go. 8:07 Friday morning after Francine, and it has been a long week for everybody. Joe Valiente joins us now, Director of Emergency Management for Jefferson Parish. Joe, let me tell you something. I know you signed up for it. I know it's part of your job, but just kudos to you and all of the people that are in public service for Jefferson Parish, Orleans Parish, all the people that St. Charles, I hate to start naming parishes, but it's not an easy job when it comes to something like this. I know you were exhausted last night, and I'm betting you probably got maybe an hour or two of sleep because your schedule was all screwed up and your mind was still racing when you tried to go to bed. Am I right?
Well, that's about 98% correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Tell me what's going on. Let's talk about what happened in Jefferson Parish with, and I guess you guys are still trying to sort it out, but with the ferry, the Duncan Canal and what happened from that point, I guess that's where you would really want to start. And let me add a little bit more to that. Would it have mattered even with the pumps or whatever happened with the amount of rainfall that we got? Now the floor is yours.
So, yes, it would not have mattered. Even if the Duncan Canal would have had all of its pumps operational. The amount of rain that we took in that short amount of time, there is no system that we're aware of that could have handled that. So we were at about 99.5% on our pumping capacity. We had two pumps that were down for maintenance, and then what happened was that there were some electrical issues, some transfer issues, and so we lost a little bit more capacity there, but two of the pumps continue to pump full. But the biggest problem was that it was throughout the entire East Bank. Mm-hmm. We had an incredible amount of flooding. I can tell you where I live in North Ridgedale, the amount of flooding we received was equivalent to what happened in Katrina. Mm-hmm. That's how close the water came to getting to my house. And look, we had 100% pumping in that area. So we saw this back in April and May, when we had that big front that came through and dumped so much water on us, and the canals came within 6 inches of overtopping then. What we need to understand here is that these hurricane systems are now have changed in nature. Yep. They are still powerful from a wind and storm surge aspect, but they've added a new dimension to their systems, and that is post-storm, post-landfall, they are becoming rain generators.
And Joe, that I think is the takeaway from this. It's been a quiet hurricane season, right? We get hit by one that is a weak category two, category one, but that's not the real story. The story is the rain that it generated. And when you look ahead to the future, you got to kind of, that changes the calculus, does it not, when it comes to your job, especially as Director of Emergency Management for Jefferson Parish and preparations that need to be made? Because like it or not, attribute it to whatever you want, it's not like it used to be when it comes to the climate and when it comes to these storms.
No, and that's where we have to look at this from a different perspective. We are now aware that there's a new risk on the table. Number one. Number two, our next job is to figure out how to mitigate this. And so it's ironic that you said that just now, but Parish President is already asking those questions. She's already challenged Mark Drews, what are we going to do next? Mm-hmm. How do we mitigate this? So we're pretty good at solving problems. We proved that during the saltwater intrusion issue we had last year. If there's a solution there, we're going to figure it out. So it might take a little time, but Mark Drews has an incredible staff on his engineering side, and they're going to take a look at this from every angle and figure out what the best possible solution is.
Well, the first step, right, the cliche is admitting that you have a problem, and it seems like everybody now, not now, but it seems like it's everybody's aware that there is a problem, things have changed, and we need to start approaching it from a different way. Accurate?
That is a perfect statement. The rules of engagement have changed for us in terms of threats and impacts.
Let's talk about lift stations and water conservation and so forth in Jefferson Parish. What's the deal there, Joe?
Well, the deal is that Mark Drews' people have been working throughout the night on that, and the good news is that we don't have to conserve water. Awesome. We're getting ready to put out a presser on that, just hot off the press for you. And you can return back to normal water use for Jefferson Parish. The minute that this occurred, Mark Drews understood what was going on and what the effect was. And so the precautionary measure was just that. It was a precautionary measure to just give his team enough time to check the entire system out to make sure that it was okay. We are good, and we have a green light to go on that now. That should be going out very, very soon.
Say that again for me, just to be clear.
Yes, yes, yes. The conserve water edict has been lifted. You can now use water.
No more lift station issues in Jefferson Parish.
No. So this is a twofold problem here. The lift station problem, we're still looking at. I mean, I think that we've got 99% of them back online, and we don't need people to conserve water anymore to give us a chance to catch up. We've caught up. So the lift station situation should be back to 100% by 11, 12 o'clock today. So if I'm not mistaken, I think Mark Drews is coming on later, and he's going to discuss that in full detail. But listen, one of the things that happens, and it's a very tricky proposition for us, is that we don't get a great level of compliance on evacuation. And clearly this storm was not an evacuating storm. So what happens is that we have the entire population, 435,000 plus, that remain back. They stay back and they ride the storm out. Well, those people need certain services. And clearly, you know, sewage is probably the top of that list. So what happens is that when we lose electricity, some of our lift stations are going to get compromised. And so that's what happened in this case. And so we have vacuum trucks. You know, we have portable generators that we can throw at the problem. But in this particular case, because of the flooding and because of the issue that occurred with it backing up, it was that was yet another dimension that we've never seen. But we were able to pivot. The Public Works Department was able to pivot, and this was the next best prescription to conserve water, so to give us enough time to fix the problem. And we thank Energy for that, because Energy has been working tirelessly to get that electric back up and then the number of lift stations back up. So,
thank you, Joe. Appreciate the information and your time. And, man, let's hope that's it for this season. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Mike DeTillier, get you ready for some football this weekend on WWL. 8:20 now. Clock's a little bit messed up, but we'll get back to normal here. Mike DeTillier joins us, WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. Morning, Mike. First question I got to ask you is, how'd you do with the storm?
Yeah, it did pretty well, Tommy. Living on the bayou, you got that, man, deluge, so to speak. And now in, I guess, 30 or 35 minutes, I got where I live at, we got a little over 7 inches of rain. But other than that...
In 35 minutes?
In an hour and 35 minutes.
Hour and 35 minutes, wow.
Yeah, and it came down. So, yeah, but did real well, and power got restored where I live at late last night. Also AT&T, which I don't quite get. I had it throughout the storm, lost it yesterday morning, got it back late last night.
I know that's...
but don't ask me why.
during Katrina, I'm like you. During Katrina, never lost it, as far as I understand. Not that I was home, but when I did get back home, it didn't appear as though it had gone out. And then, I don't know, sometimes in the middle of the week, it'll just disappear. I don't get it either. But it's good. Mike, one thing before, and look, the clock's a little bit messed up. I'm going to have to take a break here in a second, and we'll pick it up when we come back.
Yep.
But, I'm getting texts from people here, and I understand being without power and everything else, but, you're a bayou guy, and that's just part of living here, right? If this kind of thing in the summertime is just going to drive you crazy, this might not be the place for you. I hate to say that, but... I mean, it's just a fact of life. Would that be a fair evaluation, you think?
Tommy, it's part of living here. I think we sort of live in the microwave society. We want things right away. Mm-hmm. And to see the devastation for Ida, and it still sort of boggles my mind a little bit in that we were without, say, real power, generator power, but without real power for 16 days. I remember as a kid for Betsy, it was, I was just a kid, but it was over 3 weeks. And to see how quickly they can get power back on, and I understand the frustration.
Me too.
Because we live in that world and we've gotten kind of used to certain things as the AC and television and cable TV and everything else. But I saw it yesterday working that afternoon shift. People very frustrated for not getting, their electricity turned on. And the comforts of home, you don't realize what it is until you don't have it.
And I fully understand that, but we all knew a hurricane was coming, and we all were saying that there's going to be power outages, and that is going to take some time to fix, and you understand
and
that
Tommy,
before, right? Go ahead.
And Tommy, I told this to Coleman yesterday. For people who got flooded and homes damaged and everything, man, your heart goes out for them. But what happened with Francine is a kind of a minor bump.
Absolutely.
In consideration to what we know eventually we're going to get one a lot worse than that.
And that's
it's part of living here.
And that's the crux of it, Mike. If your house did flood or you are without power, none of that means anything to you. I understand that
Nothing. Fully.
But when you look at the big picture overall, it could have been a lot worse. Let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We can move on. Talk some football with Mike Dettillier. 823 Traffic Now, WWL. 827, Tommy Tucker. Quickly back to Mike Dettillier. You know who he is. Talking about Saints Cowboys coming up. Mike, when it comes to the Dallas defense, who's the straw that stirs the drink, as you like to say?
Micah Parsons. And, man, he keeps you up at night if you're an offensive coordinator. On how to block him, I think the best way to handle him is early in the game, run the football right at him. Because his strong suit is to get up the field, get in the backfield, make a play, influence the quarterback. So I try to slow that down the best I can. And in doing that is to run the football right at him. Last week against the Browns, who they had the number one defense in the NFL last year. The Cowboys' offense, they threw the football really well. They don't run the ball well. They don't have a great back. Ezekiel Elliott, he's not the same player we remember back a few years ago. But, man, their defense, they spent more time. Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, Eric Kendricks, they spent more time in the backfield than Deshaun Watson did for the Browns. He could have literally handed the football off to him. They were right there on every play, influencing him. The Browns didn't try to run the ball much, which kind of baffles me because teams that have given them trouble have given them trouble by running the football, playing a little smash-mouth football with them. The Browns didn't even try that. So, Micah Parsons, the guy, he's the next big Powerball winner in the National Football League.
Yeah, because he's the last year's rookie contract, right?
Yeah, and Jerry just finished paying Dak, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah's the next one. They'll have to unload the vault too. He's that good. He's an influencer out on the field. Even when he doesn't make a play, you have him in the back of your mind, and he does change blocking formats because he's that good.
With the Saints offensive line, and we're going to have to pick it up here after the news, Taliese Fuaga, I hope he plays. If not, that's not going to bode well for the Saints, is it?
No, indeed. You'll probably have Landon Young, left tackle. Fuaga, I thought, played tremendous against the Panthers.
Yep.
You couldn't tell he was a rookie.
Nope.
I mean, he was beating people up in the running game. I thought he did an excellent job in pass protection. Not having him there is going to cause some issues. Because if I'm Parsons, who, and what you'll see them do, they'll use him on the left, on the right. Sometimes he's right in the middle, right over the center. They do a lot of different things with him. But if Walker's not out there, man, I got him on that right side to the left tackle.
And to be clear, we don't know that he's out, do we?
No, we don't. But, man, he's had some issues the last couple of weeks with a bad lumbago. I don't know if it's a muscle strain or whatever, but his back has sort of acted up. And we know when there's sort of changes in temperature and things like that, It does have an effect on – if you got a bad back, knee, hip, you understand what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That and pregnant women, too, believe it or not. All right, we'll take a break. No, yeah. True. It's true. Women
That's
go into
true,
labor
I believe it.
With hurricanes. It's true. We'll take a break. More with Mike Dettelier when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News. Saints taking on the Cowboys on Sunday, and I often say this, and I'll say it again. If you do not turn down the sound on the TV and turn up Mike Hoss and Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak on the sideline, you're missing half the game. I don't think that's hyperbolic to say that, or I don't think I'm hyping it too much, because Deuce McAllister is the best analyst working in broadcast football today. I sincerely mean that. Plus, he's got some inside knowledge on the Saints where he'll give you the lowdown on what's happening sometimes before it happens. Mike Dettelier, part of that coverage as well. I'll give you the details momentarily. He joins us right now. Mike Dettelier, when it comes to Dak Prescott, years ago, I happened to be at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis. I was wearing Saints gear, talked to a guy who was wearing Dallas gear, and he says that he would trade, however the discussion went down, he was saying Dak Prescott was better than Drew Brees. And I thought he had lost his mind. Tell me about Dak. I know he got paid, but are we seeing anything new from him? And how do the Saints take care of him and Brandon Cooks, et cetera, on defense?
Well, I think with Dak, he's been a terrific regular season quarterback. Okay, the knock has been what happens in postseason. And you just look at how good they played and how good they played at home, Tommy. They are really a very tough team to play in their backyard, so to speak. But Dak's been a really good player during the regular season, but you sort of always remember those bad moments he's had in the postseason. He hasn't played well at all in the postseason. So I think that's where the cut comes between the elite guys who have maybe played much better in the postseason than what Dak has. But CeeDee Lamb's the guy. I mean, he's one of the elite wideouts in the National Football League today. And he's not this big, thickly built receiver. He's a thin-built guy, but just great body control. He's so smooth getting into and out of his cuts and his breaks. His ability to set up a defensive back and gain separation downfield, and then after the catch, he's dangerous. So he's the guy. The problem is, man, you'd love to have had him one-on-one with Marshawn Lattimore. But then Marshawn got hurt in the game last week with the hamstring. Most likely won't play in this game. So you're going to have to do a little bracket coverage with CeeDee Lamb. He's that good. You can't say one guy's going to cover him the entire game. They do a lot of formations to free him up. Their offensive line is a much younger unit today and a real good one. They just don't run the ball well. That's the big question mark for Dallas this season. And I give Jerry a lot of credit. And he's got something to do with this. They probably drafted as well as any team in the NFL over the past 5 to 7 years. If you're talking about just draft choices and you think about the team that they've built, Jerry and that crew have done it as well as anybody. But they haven't won anything. And I think that's the thing for people, for all the publicity they get and the coverage they get. They have not fared well in postseason. So but in the regular season and at home, man, they are really tough in their backyard.
Do we know for a fact that Marshawn's not playing, or we can pretty well infer?
No, we don't know for a fact, but he's missed the last 2 days of practice. And that hamstring, this goes back to his days at Ohio State. He had hamstring issues there. I think it's why he lasted a little bit longer in round one than I thought. I thought he'd be a top 10 pick. He went a little outside of that. I think there were some concerns of that. There wasn't that issue early in his career. Not the last couple years, he's had issues with the hamstring. And now he had the hip flexor in training camp, and now the hamstring issue. So I would be surprised if he played. Pleasantly surprised, but I'd be surprised.
So who takes his place? Kool-Aid?
I think you'd want to put some one-on-one situations with him and Paulson Adebo. Mm-hmm. And maybe a little follow here and there. But there will be times where you're going to have to bracket him if it's with Kool-Aid and Alante or with a safety. You're going to have to do a little bracket coverage on him. You can't leave him out on the wing by himself one-on-one with a defensive back. He's going to beat that guy. You can say, well, yeah, that's kind of downgrading the corner. No, that's just telling you how good CeeDee Lamb is as a wideout.
So on the front end, the best way to help the guys in the defensive backfield is with what, Mike? What breaks the pipe?
Stopping the run and then putting pressure on Dak.
Yep.
That, to me, has been the formula. Same thing on offense. If you can run the football against the Cowboys, and I think the Saints will try, that's the way of breaking down that very aggressive front unit that wants to get in there, cause havoc, cause you to make a bad pass, a tipped pass or whatever, get you off the field, and then you get a short field for Dak to throw the football. But for the Saints defensively, stop the run first and then put pressure on Prescott. Because if you let him sit back there, I don't care who it is with him, he's good enough to carve you if you give him time. So stop the run and put extra pressure on him.
Saints are 6.5-point underdogs. I don't know what the total is. Tim, do you know what the total is? We're looking it up right now. How do you see the game playing out, Mike? High scoring, low scoring, and do you see the Saints?
No, I think it's a low scoring game. I really do. You go back the last few years between these two teams, they have played some low scoring games. And I suspect the same thing will happen. I think that's the play here.
46.5 is a total.
I think it's a lower scoring game. The 6.5, I think, partially too, is maybe they knew a little bit more about some of the injuries with Lattimore and Fuaga than we did. And secondly, how well Dallas has played at home. That's a big part of setting a line, because they're going to always have money on the Cowboys. It's a heavily bet team and heavily bet on the Cowboys in the regular season, and especially when they play at home. So I think it's a close game, but I think it's a low-scoring game here. I think that's what you've seen the last few times they've played. And, again, it's not all the time, but history sort of does repeat itself.
Saints win with a walk-off field goal. What do you think?
I would like that.
Yeah, me too.
Again, they've been real difficult to
Saints taking on the Cowboys on Sunday, and I often say this, and I'll say it again. If you do not turn down the sound on the TV and turn up Mike Hoss and Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak on the sideline, you're missing half the game. And I don't think that's hyperbolic to say that, or I don't think I'm hyping it too much, because Deuce McAllister is the best analyst working in broadcast football today. I sincerely mean that. Plus, he's got some inside knowledge on the Saints where he'll give you the lowdown on what's happening sometimes before it happens. Mike Dettelier, part of their coverage as well. I'll give you the details momentarily. He joins us right now. Mike Dettillier, when it comes to Dak Prescott, years ago, I happened to be at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis. I was wearing Saints gear, talked to a guy who was wearing Dallas gear, and he says that he would trade however the discussion went down, he was saying Dak Prescott was better than Drew Brees. And I thought he had lost his mind. Tell me about Dak. I know he got paid, but are we seeing anything new from him? And how do the Saints take care of him and Brandon Cooks, et cetera, on defense?
Well, I think with Dak, he's been a terrific regular season quarterback. Okay, the knock has been what happens in postseason. Mm-hmm. And you just look at how good they played and how good they played at home, Tommy. They are really a very tough team to play in their backyard, so to speak. But Dak's been a really good player during the regular season, but you sort of always remember those bad moments he's had in the postseason. He hasn't played well at all in the postseason. So I think that's where the cut comes between the elite guys who have maybe played much better in the postseason than what Dak has. But CeeDee Lamb's the guy. I mean, he's one of the elite wideouts in the National Football League today. And he's not this big, thickly built receiver. He's a thin-built guy, but just great body control. He's so smooth getting into and out of his cuts and his breaks. His ability to set up a defensive back and gain separation downfield, and then after the catch, he's dangerous. So he's the guy. The problem is, man, you'd have loved to have had him one-on-one with Marshawn Lattimore. But then Marshawn got hurt in the game last week with the hamstring. Most likely won't play in this game. So you're going to have to do a little bracket coverage with CeeDee Lamb. He's that good. You can't say one guy's going to cover him the entire game. They do a lot of formations to free him up. Their offensive line is a much younger unit today and a real good one. They just don't run the ball well. That's the big question mark for Dallas this season. And I give Jerry a lot of credit, and he's got something to do with this. They probably drafted as well as any team in the NFL over the past 5 to 7 years. If you're talking about just draft choices, mm-hmm. and you think about the team that they've built, Jerry and that crew have done it as well as anybody, but they haven't won anything. And I think that's the thing for people, for all the publicity they get and the coverage they get, they have not fared well in postseason.
So
in the regular season and at home, man, they are really tough in their backyard.
Do we know for a fact that Marshawn's not playing, or we can pretty well infer?
No, we don't know for a fact, but he's missed the last 2 days of practice, and that hamstring, mm-hmm. this goes back to his days at Ohio State. He had hamstring issues there. I think it's why he lasted a little bit longer in round one than I thought. I thought he'd be a top 10 pick. He went a little outside of that. I think there was some concerns of that. There wasn't that issue early in his career. Not the last couple years, he's had issues with the hamstring, and now he had the hip flexor in training camp, and now the hamstring issue. So I would be surprised if he played.
So
pleasantly surprised, but I'd be surprised.
So who takes his place? Kool-Aid?
I think you'd want to put some one-on-one situations with him and Paulson Adebo. Mm-hmm. And maybe a little follow here and there. But there will be times where you're going to have to bracket him if it's with Kool-Aid and Alante or with a safety. You're going to have to do a little bracket coverage on him. You can't leave him out on the wing by himself one-on-one with a defensive back. He's going to beat that guy. You can say, well, yeah, that's kind of downgrading the corner. No, that's just telling you how good CeeDee Lamb is as a wideout.
So on the front end, the best way to help the guys in the defensive backfield is with what, Mike? What breaks the pipe?
Stopping the run and then putting pressure on Dak.
Yep.
That to me has been their the formula. Same thing on offense. If you can run the football against the Cowboys, and I think the Saints will try, that's the way of breaking down that very aggressive front unit that wants to get in there, cause havoc, cause you to make a bad pass, a tipped pass or whatever, get you off the field, and then you get a short field for Dak to throw the football. But for the Saints defensively, stop the run first and then put pressure on Prescott. Because if you let him sit back there, I don't care who it is with him, he's good enough to carve you if you give him time. So stop the run and put extra pressure on him.
Saints are 6.5-point underdogs. I don't know what the total is. Tim, do you know what the total is? We're looking it up right now. How do you see the game playing out, Mike? High scoring, low scoring, and do you see the Saints?
No, I think it's a low scoring game. I really do. You go back the last few years between these two teams, they have played some low scoring games. And I suspect the same thing will happen. I think that's the play here.
46.5 is a total.
I think it's a lower scoring game. The 6.5, I think, partially too, is maybe they knew a little bit more about some of the injuries with Lattimore and Fuaga than we did. And secondly, how well Dallas has played at home. That's a big part of setting a line, because they're going to always have money on the Cowboys. It's a heavily bet team and heavily bet on the Cowboys in the regular season, and especially when they play at home. So I think it's a close game, but I think it's a low-scoring game here. I think that's what you've seen the last few times they've played. And, again, it's not all the time, but history sort of does repeat itself.
Saints win with a walk-off field goal. What do you think?
I would like that.
Yeah, me too.
Again, they've been real difficult to beat in Dallas. I'm going to be honest with you. They've been really difficult. And the one thing I give them is they have one of the Saints do also, but Dallas has an elite special teams unit.
I was going to ask.
Really good. Man, they are as good as you'll find in the NFL. Man, Bones does a great job coaching that unit, and everywhere he goes, those special teams are at the top of the ladder. So I expect a low-scoring game, and I think it'll be a field goal touchdown type game, but I like the under.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it as always. Glad you fared the storm fairly well.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Tommy.
Pleasure as always. All right, we'll listen to you on Sunday, and then we'll talk to you again on Monday. Ian McNulty is going to join us next hour, talk about food and dining. Then we'll get you some weekend winners as we try to get back to normal. I know if you're without power, it's anything but they're working on it. Hang in there. 855 traffic now, WWL.